This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. We're into the Slichot season now. No excuses. Everybody's in. We're in the final run towards Rosh Hashanah. As we're going through this, unfortunately, there have been so many incidents of Israeli sportsmen and women and participants in international events who have been discriminated against over the past few weeks and months. And I've just got a few examples from over the weekend, which is quite astonishing. First of all, in the Vuelta España, the cycle race, which has been taking place in Madrid, the Israeli Premier Tech team has been participating in that race. And even one of the members of that team, Matthew Riccitello, who is 23 years old, has won the prize for the best young rider of the race. And in spite of that, there was a massive demonstration yesterday in Madrid where the race actually had to be called off because of the demonstrations that were taking place against the participation of the Israeli Premier Tech team in the race. And it even went further than that when the Spanish Prime Minister praised the demonstrations and said that he was proud of the Spanish people for coming out and demonstrating in this way against the participation of the Israeli team. Then there was another incident in Spain involving Israeli chess players. And this involved an International Chess Federation tournament in Spain, where the organizers were not able to uninvite the Israeli participants, but they simply told the Israelis that they didn't want them to participate. And so they said they are standing by the requirements of the International Chess Federation by making the tournament open to everybody, except that they're making it clear that the Israelis are not welcome. And there were a number of Israelis, seven all in all, who had signed up for the tournament. They were then told that they would be forced to play without the representation of their flag. And the lives of those Israeli chess players were made so unpleasant that eventually each one separately, one by one, withdrew from the tournament because their participation just simply was not viable under the circumstances. And just one last example, and that is of Israeli musician Lahav Shani. Lahav Shani is an Israeli musical prodigy, a concert pianist and a double bassist. And he is also currently the principal conductor of the Israeli Philharmonic Orchestra. He's 36 years old, born in Israel and learned his music not only in Israel, but indeed in Berlin. And he's considered to be a real musical genius. Now, Lahav Shani, in addition to conducting the Israeli Philharmonic, also conducts the Rotterdam Philharmonic, the Vienna Philharmonic, and he conducts the Munich Philharmonic Orchestra. And he is really well known and very much treasured in all of those places where he conducts. The Munich Philharmonic Orchestra was due to have played at the Flanders Festival in Ghent in Belgium, and the organizers decided to disinvite the Munich Philharmonic Orchestra, stating that Lahav Shani had not unequivocally distanced himself from the Israeli government. And as a result of that, they were uninvited from the Flanders Festival in Ghent. As a result of which, the German government came out criticizing this decision. And not only that, but inviting the orchestra to play in concerts in Germany to make up for the lack of participation in the Flanders Festival. And would you believe that the Belgian Prime Minister, Bart De Vida, actually decided to travel to Germany to attend one of those replacement festivals, concerts that were put on by the Munich Philharmonic Orchestra under the conductorship of Lahav Shani. And he came out saying that he criticized the festival's decision to uninvite the orchestra. And he traveled to the German city of Essen to prove that he personally wanted to support the Munich Philharmonic Orchestra and Lahav Shani in particular. And there's a great picture showing the Belgian Prime Minister shaking Lahav Shani's hand at the end of the concert to show his support. He actually even went on Twitter saying he just attended a wonderful performance in Essen by the Munich Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Lahav Shani. Immediately after the horrific terrorist attack by Hamas, I expressed my fear that the Israeli government would allow itself to be drawn into an endless war of terror. There are innocent civilians. He went on to make quite a statement and then went on to say that he strongly condemned the cancellation of the Munich Philharmonic Orchestra by the Flanders Festival in Ghent solely on the basis of the origin of conductor Lahav Shani. So credit to the Belgian Prime Minister for making that statement, but things are pretty tough at the moment, especially in Europe, for Israeli sportsmen and for artists.
Is there precedent for this? I mean, do we see Chinese athletes being banned or because of actions of the Chinese government or anyone else,
or
Cuba, Russia? Are we seeing that at all?
What we're seeing, especially with the Russian artists, is that they're allowed to participate in many events, but not under the Russian flag. That's the way that the Russians are currently being treated. But there is no official declaration from any sports organization that justifies the treatment of the Israelis. There are a number of sports organizations.
There's certainly no protests about the Russians, are there?
Not at all. Not at all.
I mean, Russians aren't being precluded from going to restaurants and sports events. That's not a reality.
Or accosted on the streets, or you know, all the protests that we've seen. So yeah, I mean, life is pretty tough right now for all of those who wish to participate in these international events. And you know, credit to people like Lahav Shani, who has insisted that he will continue his art.
Unbelievable. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has arrived in Israel, and that's to meet with government officials. What do we know? What's on his agenda?
Well, this is quite a difficult visit by the U.S. Secretary of State. He has already made a number of stops in the Middle East before coming to Israel, and there was a great picture showing him along with Prime Minister Netanyahu at the Kotel yesterday, where he went straight away when he first arrived in Israel. But we understand that the discussions between Marco Rubio and Israeli officials are going to be quite difficult. And the real difficulty comes from the attack in Qatar last week, which is increasingly looking like it did not succeed in its main objective. And the fact that the US government now finds itself somewhat compromised, because on the one hand, they are very enthusiastic about supporting Qatar as much as they can. Let's not forget that one of the largest US air bases is located in Qatar, and therefore Qatar is to the US a strategic ally and a strategic partner. And having said that, it was, of course, Israel that attacked Qatari territory in Doha, looking for those Hamas leaders. And it wasn't as much the fact that this attack took place and it might have damaged some property in Doha, but it was more about the embarrassment that was caused to the Qatari government by the fact that Israel was just acting with impunity in terms of deciding to carry out an attack on its sovereign territory. Now, I mean, there are many people who would turn around and say, well, if you want to house a terror group in your cities, then you need to kind of put up with whatever comes next. You know, there's the so-called FOFA doctrine, which says that if you're going to try things out, then you will get to find out what the consequences are. And the fact that the Qataris have housed the leadership, the main leadership, has to come with a consequence. But I think it even goes one step further than that, because it was President Herzog who actually said yesterday that the Hamas leaders in Qatar have been poisoning. That was the word that he used. They have been poisoning the hostage negotiations. And so the Hamas leadership in Doha are considered to be the ones, at least by the Israeli government, who are preventing any agreement being reached for the release of our hostages and potentially for the end of the war. Now, there are many Israelis who have differing views on this. Some believe that the Israeli government is using this war in order to try to somehow extend its time in office, and that they have some interest in trying not to reach an agreement on the hostage release and therefore not to bring an end to the war. There are more than a few Israelis who hold that view. But the president yesterday came out saying unequivocally that it is the Hamas leadership in Doha who are poisoning the hostage negotiations, and the Qatari administration are kind of implicated, because there's no way that they don't understand what's going on, who is doing what. They are the interlocutors. They are the ones who are doing all the go-between work between the Israeli delegation and Hamas. They are the ones who are housing Hamas within their territory. There is no possible way that they don't understand what the agenda is that's being followed. And if they do understand that agenda, and they continue to dance this dance, and they continue to do, you know, the usual steps that make it out, make a show as if though they're really trying to bring things to an end, knowing full well that this is just all choreographed and that it's not really going to bring anything to an end, then they are kind of implicated in all of this as well. And I think that that's where the Israeli government are going. And I think that that's the reason why they felt last week that they could do that, carry out that act, and potentially alienate the Qataris in the process. The problem is, of course, as I've said, that this now compromises the US government. So those discussions between Marco Rubio and the Israeli government are difficult. Marco Rubio has gone out of his way to try not to criticize the Israeli government. He did say that the attack last week in Qatar was not good, that they were not pleased, that they're not happy about all of that. Those are the words that have been used. And in fact, President Trump has come out to say that they are looking to try to strengthen their relations with Qatar, that Qatar is a very, very important ally to the United States. So he's come out very much supportive of Qatar. It seems as if, though, and there's quite a lot of work that needs to be done during this visit in order to somehow bring things to an end. One thing that I will say about Marco Rubio is that he says all the time when asked that all 48 hostages should be released all at once, and the war should be brought to an end. So I think that that particular avenue, that statement and that position that the US administration is taking, and that's been amplified by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, is indeed very welcome. Exactly where that is taking us to remains unknown for now.
The UN General Assembly voted overwhelmingly in favor of a resolution that calls for a path to establish a Palestinian state. What are the consequences of this vote?
Well, I think the first, there are quite a number of things that are worth saying about this vote. The first of which is that it's non-binding, and therefore ultimately quite meaningless in the overall scheme of international law. It does, however, represent a certain sentiment in the world, which we cannot ignore. Even if this resolution is non-binding, we cannot ignore the sentiment that has been expressed by 142 countries out of the UN General Assembly. I mean, it's not an overwhelming majority. It's a landslide. It's an absolute landslide with 142 countries. Only 10 countries voted against, and a further 10 countries abstained. There were 10 countries, 12 countries, I'm sorry, that abstained in the vote. So 142 countries in favor, 22 countries decided not to vote in favor. And as I say, this sentiment can't be ignored. Now, one of the interesting things about this resolution was that it was very much watered down, and it was made to sound like it could be absolutely acceptable to all parties because it absolutely criticized and condemned Hamas on October the 7th and called upon Hamas to free hostages, and also said that the new Palestinian state, or the Palestinian state that should be established, should not include Hamas, that Hamas should be disarmed, and that the Palestinian state that they're calling for the establishment of should not have Hamas as part of its leadership. And so, under those circumstances, you would say, well, it sounds almost like we could support this resolution because we are condemning Hamas, we're condemning October the 7th, we're calling for a release of the hostages, we're mentioning the fact that Hamas should be disarmed, we are mentioning the fact that
It
the
says all the right
Palestinian state,
things.
it says everything that sounds like you want to support it. But here, I think, is the real kicker. And I think the real kicker is that the timing is just terrible. I think that at a different time and in a different place, when we don't have hostages in Gaza and when we're not fighting a war, potentially even Israel might be inclined to support a resolution like that. But the timing of it is just terrible. And it's not a moment that we can really stand up and say, well, this is the moment that we really want to establish a Palestinian state, having seen what the consequences have been of giving over Gaza to independent rule by the Palestinians, as the world has been demanding, and as the world continues to demand. The consequences of handing Gaza over in 2005 and doing everything that the world thought would be the right thing to do, even though Israel didn't get proper credit for it at the time. But the reality is that that's what happened. And the consequences of those actions have been dramatic. And so now doesn't seem the right time to renew that and say, let's do that again. We've already paid the price for that. It doesn't seem the right thing to do, even if it's not Hamas, even if Hamas are disarmed, even if all of the other things are put in place. It just doesn't seem the right time. So that's why I think this is just not the right thing to be doing at this time.
Do you agree with Anthony Reich? What do you think? The resolution itself doesn't seem, or certainly not as onerous as it could have been. But Anthony's saying the timing is a real issue. What do you think? 0618951019. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45 for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.